Today we are celebrating the disappearance anniversary Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, who is known as the founder of 64 Gaudiya Mathas and is more famous at the present time as the spiritual master of His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of ISKCON. In a lecture on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance anniversary, Srila Prabhupada explained that there's no difference between appearance and disappearance for a liberated soul, for the Supreme Lord and other liberated souls. We say liberated soul as translation of Jivan Mukta or Nitya Siddha. It gives the impression that formerly was not liberated, but that's not exactly. Mukta Purush, that's the term. It gives the impression that at some point he may not have been liberated, but the liberated soul is always liberated. Even the sadhana siddhas, once they're siddhas, they're considered always liberated. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada was explained there's no difference between appearance and disappearance because the liberated souls are not within the scope of mundane time. It's just like the sun. For us, we see a difference between the sunrise and the sunset. And in among some primitive peoples, there may have been the idea that the sun is a new sun is born every day, and a sun dies every day. But people who know the actual fact know simply that the sun comes into our vision and leaves our vision. So for the sun, there's no difference. It's just from our point of view. Just like we say, the clouds are covering the sun. But it's only from our vision. The cloud has no capacity to cover the sun. We are in Maya, we're under the illusion of Maya. But that covering is our vision of Krishna. It doesn't cover Krishna. Maya doesn't cover Krishna. It's Mahamaya, external potency of Krishna. So for a liberated soul, they come into this world and they appear to be from the worldly perspective. They appear to be part of this world, and we can also say there's a certain day of appearance and disappearance. In biographical references in books, we will write something like 1874- or whatever it should be, N-dash, 1936, as if he came into being in 1874 and ceased to exist in 1936. That is not the case. Bhakti Siddhanta is eternally existing. And Upasiddhanta is also always existing. So Bhakti Siddhanta, in the form of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, comes into the world from time to time and slashes the upper Siddhanta, removes the darkness. Rupa Anuga Virudha Upper Siddhanta Dvanta Harine. The darkness of the not exactly misunderstandings, but wrong conclusions, wrong, wrong conclusions considering in relation to the followers of Rupa Goswami. So he removes the darkness. Tanta Hari means he who removes the darkness. The darkness is the darkness concerning the proper understanding of the teachings of Rupa Goswami Prabhupada and his followers. In other words, the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Nevertheless, we celebrate his Vyasa Puja, his appearance and his disappearance. They are days on which his appearance and disappearance are remembered, and there is no difference. So it's not that on the appearance day we speak a lot about his appearance, or that on his disappearance day we speak more about his disappearance, but actually what's in between is every second of it, every moment of it is as important. It's not just that his disappearance is important, and therefore we celebrate on this day his disappearance. But it's his activities. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti sojana. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna states that those who can understand the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities do not, upon quitting their present body, get another one, but they go directly to Krishna to stay with him, and they don't come back. So the nature of the pure devotees is they are etadishanam ishasya prakritisto pitagunai na yujyate sadatmasthaya. What's the last line? Na yujyate. And the last line is the important one. It means that the devotees are in the same category as the Supreme Lord, that the very nature of the Supreme Lord is that he, even though within material nature, he is not affected by it. And tadashraya, that's the last word in this verse. Now those who are in the direct shelter of the Supreme Lord, they're in the same category. So among janma and karma, Srila Prabhupada explained, the karma is most important. That's true of any person. If we think of any so-called great person of this material world, there are so many. In the modern age, there's Napoleon, Hitler, Mahatma Gandhi. These are all great persons of the material world. They made a great impression at their time. They influenced world events. So their getting born wasn't very important. It's not that upon getting born there were trumpets blown and people started writing biographies. But it's only when they started performing their various activities that their importance became manifest. So Krishna, his importance was manifest right at his janma. But that was only perceived by persons on this plane, on this earth, by Vasudeva and Devaki. But his importance became established, Srila Prabhupada explained it, that when he started the killing the demons, which started pretty much immediately. But even his playing in Vrindavan, of course from the transcendental perspective, everything that Krishna does, and his playing in Vrindavan is most important, but Kamsa wouldn't give two hoots, wouldn't give a damn, wouldn't care at all, wouldn't give a fig. That's the Indian term. He wouldn't give a fig if Krishna had only been playing in Vrindavan. It was the fact that Krishna was killing all the demons that caused Kamsa to have restless nights and restless days also. made him afraid. So similarly, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, in one sense, and then there's back to Krishna first, so we can complete the example. So from Krishna's point of view, or the devotee's, pure devotee's point of view, his love for his devotees as manifest in Vrindavan, Dwaraka, and his exchanges with the devotees, that is the most important thing, and that is Krishna's Swarup. That means Krishna's two Bhagavans, Krishna, the original form of the many forms of the personality of Godhead. The most important thing about him, from his own point of view, and from his own internal devotees' point of view, is simply the love that he exchanges with his devotees. But from the terrestrial standpoint, his killing the demons is most important. We don't find in Mahabharata the description of Raja Leela, but we find Krishna's movements and machinations to protect the Pandavas. His worldly, that's why Mahabharata is not on the same level as Srimad Bhagavatam, because it explains Krishna's apparently worldly dealings, whereas Bhagavatam explains some of them also, but also explains his what we may say holy transcendental dealings, not that, or internal dealings. It's not that any of Krishna's activities are in any way mundane, but some are connected to the earth's, the bharaharam, the lifting the burden of the earth. That those activities are performed by the Vishnu aspect of Krishna, who is non-different from Krishna. It's performed by Krishna through the Vishnu aspect. But his own personal internal activities are Rasa Vilas, playing the Rasa Leela, and all the Vraja Vilas, especially the pastimes in Vrindavan, and also in other places. His dealings, his exchanges with his devotees. So similarly, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the most important, or his swarup, if we have swarup vichar, if we try to understand what is his internal activities, that is same as Krishna's internal activities, except that he is in the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is in the position of Sri Varshabhanavi Dayata Das. And Krishna is Varshabhanavi Dayata. Krishna is the lover of Radharani, and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is the servant of Krishna. So they're both of the same category. Yatha buddhistadasha, that's the last line of the verse. The same mentality, the same understanding is of the pure devotees and the Supreme Lord. There's just a difference in status. In Leela, the grass and the flute and the servants of Krishna and the friends of Krishna, the parents of Krishna, the lovers of Krishna, they're not any less important than Krishna. It's Krishna himself said to Uddhava, that what is that verse? Naivatmai. What is that verse? Nacha Sankarshano Nashriya. He says that you are more dear to me than all my I have so many devotees or so many persons in important positions that Natata me priyatama atma yonena shankaraha nacha sankarshano na shriya naiva atma cha yathabhava. He said to Uddhava, Uddhava was speaking to Uddhava, but by saying the name of Uddhava, he meant all his devotees. He said to him, Krishna said to Uddhava, that you are more dear to me than Nachatame Priyatama, than Brahma, who is born from my own body, and Shankara, Shiva, and more dear to me than my Sankarshan, Balaram, and more dear to me than my wife, Sri Lakshmi, and more dear to me than myself. You are more dear to me. So we may say, well, the others mentioned they're also devotees. But here we can understand that Krishna is referring to the... It's not that all the other devotees are not dear to Krishna. That's the point, that they are dear, but still Uddhava or the pure devotees are more dear. But here we can understand when Krishna is speaking about Brahma and Shiva, that they're not dear simply for their position of being the son of Krishna. Brahma is the son, he's the engineer and orchestrator, engineer of the universe and supreme orchestrator of activities within the universe. But still, that pleases Krishna, but not as much as pure devotion. So similarly, Shankara is, in one sense, the grandson of Krishna, and he's the destroyer of the universe. It's a very important position. He is every destruction that we see, that is, whether it's a tsunami or a war or whatever, that's all taking energy from Rudra, from Shankara. He's, all destruction is his portfolio. So Shankara, Sankara, he's the brother of Krishna. So not simply by being his brother or being the one who, by whose reflection of whose energy the whole universe, everything is held in place. It's not simply because of that, that he's... Or by that alone, he is not more dear to Krishna than Uddhava is. And similarly, even the wife of Krishna is not... Simply by being his wife, she's not as dear to Krishna as his pure devotees. And even Krishna himself, even that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he's not that much concerned with that as the love of his pure devotees. So in Krishna Leela, Krishna, from Krishna's point of view, Krishna is not any more important or actually less important than his pure devotees. So in Leela, as the devotees, they are more important than Krishna, from Krishna's point of view, because he doesn't like to be impersonal on his own. Those who are worshipping Krishna alone, there's a touch of Mayavada, because they don't recognize, or a touch of impersonalism, because they don't recognize Krishna's... He's never alone. Krishna means with all his associates. That's a comment by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. Those who worship Krishna alone, he is, well, that's another of his theological contributions. Whoops, make a note of that. Someone make a note and tell me afterwards. It's after 25 years, I finally realized that that's one of his theological contributions which we should mention in the book. I don't know of any acharya previous to that said so. So Krishna lives for his devotees. He's not just alone, and his whole Vrindavan and Dwaraka, he didn't build that for his own pleasure, but that's for his devotees, and devotees are concerned with Krishna's pleasure. So it's simply different roles. Krishna, in the technical language, is in the subject of prema, or love of, or love. Love means for Krishna. But in the subject of prema, Krishna is the Vishay Vigraha, or the object, the person of the object of prema for everyone else. And everyone else, the pure devotees, they are Ashraya Vigraha. They are the shelter of that love. So it's simply different positions, that's all. So the pure devotees, they are as important as Krishna. And actually, from our point of view, us miserable, myself, miserable, conditioned souls stuck in this miserable material world, the Ashray Vigraha is more important than Krishna. Ashrayalaya bhaje, Krishna tare nahe taje. Ar shab more akara, Narottam Das Thakur says that those who take shelter and worship Krishna in that way, Krishna will never reject them. And everyone else, they're simply living useless. That's all. So the pure devotees, they're more important than Krishna to us, because he can give us Krishna. Krishna doesn't give himself. Why should he give himself to people who are not even that much interested in him, not qualified to approach him? But the pure devotees, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's words, Krishna she toma, Krishna dite paro, tomara shakati acha. You can, addressing the pure devotee, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that Krishna is yours. You can give Krishna. You have the power to do so. So Ashray Vigraha, the original Ashray Vigraha, is Radharani. She is the receptacle of love for Krishna. The Ashray, the Adhar, means the receptacle. She is the personification, or the resting place, or whichever way, various ways it can be expressed. And all the pure devotees, they're also ashray. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would often use this term, ashray vigraha. We have to approach the ashray vigraha. And he didn't always define whether he meant Radharani or the pure devotees. And actually, there is no difference, in the sense that, well, especially the pure devotees in the who are serving Krishna in Madhurya Rasa, there's no difference in as much as they are completely in line with, or their mood of service is not different to that of Radha. They are, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he is Radha Nijajan. He's a personal associate of Radharani. So they have to be, for that status, one has to be just like, not just like, there's no one else of that status. Nalita, she is the first servant, female servant of Radharani. So she is Swarup Damodar Goswami. And about him it's explained in relationship to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Swarup Goshaya Bhagya Najai Bhangan Prabhu Rabishtata Bhaka Kaimon, that there is no, it's not possible to describe the fortune of Swarup Damodar Goswami because his words, body and mind are completely absorbed in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's because Lalita, she is sometimes, Lalita and Vishakha, they're sometimes called Anuradha, which means they're complete followers of Radha. And they are another Radha in one sense, because their mood and even the intensity of service, it's not just the mood, but even the intensity is as complete. So these are highly esoteric subjects, no doubt, not easily understandable, even if we think we understand them. Talk about it as if we understand it, and but actually understanding means entering into that spirit of service, which is the very meaning of Radha, service. So anyway, it's appropriate to discuss this because Varsha Bhanavi Dayata Das is one of the names of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He is the servant of Krishna, and of course Krishna has so many names, and everyone's a servant of Krishna. But, there's so many servants of Krishna in so many rasas and so many situations. Krishna is Dwarakadhish, he is Vrajanath, he is Makana Taskara, he has so many names connected with his devotees and his pastimes and his places of pastimes. But specifically, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is the servant of Krishna as the Krishna as the lover of Radharani. Varshabhanavi is this name of Radha, is also significant in relation to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There are many names of Radha also. And Varshabhanavi specifically means the daughter of Rishabhanuman. So this is a name which is spoken by someone will speak this name who is very intimate with Radharani, intimate and respectful. It's both intimacy and respect are implied by this name. So this is very much the mood of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his contribution, one of his contributions. You can make a note of that also. Another theological contribution. Just make a note. There's, one is the, what was that? The worshipping Krishna alone is tends to the impersonal. And another is his, what I'm going to say now is his Pujala Raga Pata Gaurava Bhangi. He's approaching the path, the Raga Pata, the path of worshipping Krishna in Vrindavan beyond the platform of rules and regulations, simply in pure love but his contribution, or one of his, or his very mood, or the mood he manifested, was one of worshipping that, that those devotees. That that we serve such devotees. We approach the Ragapatha, not jumping into a sari, and not that I am. Now I am Lalita Sakhi. Now I am a gopi. But to serve those devotees, which is actually the only way to approach it, because the devotees in Vrindavan, or all pure devotees, they're not in the mood that I'm becoming a gopi so I can enjoy dancing with Krishna. I aspire for that situation. I find the Gauriya Acharyas have written many prayers in which they aspire for the situation of a young girl in Vrindavan so they can serve Radha and Krishna. And so especially the gopis of Vrindavan, they're very respectful to Radha. Even to qualify that, the sakis, they may sometimes not be so respectful externally, but the manjaris, the young girls, they're very respectful. So, pujala ragapata, our business is not to try to enjoy becoming devotees, or enjoy the liberated state, but to worship them. We go beyond the gora of the mood of, yes, going beyond the mood of awe and reverence, but the puja, to worship, it's not that puja is all given, or the mood of reverence is completely given up, but that is directed toward the intimate devotees. And that brings intimacy. So this is the internal life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which he was very careful not to demonstrate. He didn't like to show that. He spoke of it. By his activities, we can understand he was fully there all the time. Not just by his speaking of it, but his often, especially with more intimate devotees, he would speak to them about these topics, not telling stories about that, but revealing how their service in the Sankirtan movement was. It's not just that we're ordering so many bags of rice. It's not just some kind of chore that we have to do. You know what the word chore means in English? It doesn't mean a thief. It means a task which is, it's just something you don't really want to do, but you do it. It's drudgerous task. It's called a chore in English. You do it, but what am I doing? It's cleaning the pots. I should go into Vrindavan and put on a sari and become a gopi. But you would reveal, the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would sometimes reveal that all these services, they are exactly non-different, if we can understand that. It's on this is service to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is, we just read this, Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya Radha Krishna. He is Radha and Krishna. So it's not that these services in the Sankirtan movement are any different from. Different from means it's a different phase of the Lord's pastimes. Radha Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, same, but just in a different manifestation. So not different from, or any less than, serving Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. And actually, serving Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, they'll also be ordering rice. Maybe not exactly from the shop, but all they has to be prepared. You may say, what's the ultimate goal of life? Well, I'll take the form of a gopi and string a garland.
String a garland?
And then I have to make some pan. That's what people in a pan shop do. I'm going to do that. That's the ultimate to come to. That is the ultimate goal of life. So it may seem drudgerous or boring, but it's the same thing. In Gaur Leela and Krishna Leela, it's just that the Lord himself is in a different mood and the devotees respond to that. So, he would reveal that just like one of his disciples, once he was walking with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They were walking up and down, and Hayagriva Brahmachari was fanning his guru as he walked on a hot day. That's what disciples do. Kind of thing they're supposed to do. We don't do nowadays because we think a fan is either something you offer in arati or it's some electrical item. So there's less service to gurus and thanks to modern technology. Otherwise the disciple, they would have to stay up all night on a hot evening, fanning. That was being done even up to the time of Bhaktisiddhanta. I don't know if I never heard that they personally did that, but at least his sannyasis. I know of at least one case of one devotee who was also a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He was fanning one sannyasi who was practically his grandfather's age. He would fan him all night. So, you lost track of what I'm saying? Anyway, this Hayagriva Brahmachari was fanning Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he was a prominent devotee. And at that time, he wasn't so much a preacher, but he would organize preaching. He was a big organizer. He would go to places. Preacher not in the sense of what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would call a platform speaker, one who sits on a seat and speaks. But he would meet people and he would preach to them and get donations for the activities and organize programs, go to different places and organize programs. So he was an organizer. And later by his service, that service to the Vaishnavas, he himself became, actually you could say in many ways, before the advent for Srila Prabhupada, our own Srila Prabhupada, his activities became revealed to the world that Madhav Maharaj, he later took sannyas, after the departure from this world of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he became in many ways the most prominent preacher. And even though he wasn't the inheritor of either of the two camps that the Gauriya Math split into. He wasn't the appointed acharya or any such thing, but by his own preaching capacity, he actually made many disciples and established many maths. So Hayagriva, he was fanning Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he had been deputed to bring one complaint about another disciple to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was told, "You're showing your mouth. Please keep it closed," as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said to Jyoti Shekhar Prabhu, who was sitting like that with his mouth open. "Don't show such a big face." These are some basic things. Another thing you can learn is that civilized people, when they urinate, they don't stand up. That's for horses and cows. Squatting, just, I don't want to embarrass you, but I happen to notice that you are doing so many things. Modern Indians also have to learn how to be human beings, because in the last generation they forgot. Otherwise, at least they were human beings. Now in present generation, they've also joined the subhuman species. So, anyway, back to discussion of Radharani. It's all not different. How can we attain Radha service? Well, first thing, when you urinate, squat, don't stand up. That's the first thing. First become a human being, and then we'll talk about other things. So, he didn't want to do this, he felt hesitant to do it, but because he was pressed to do so by a sannyasi godbrother who himself didn't want to bring this to the attention of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he asked Hayagriva to do so. So while they were walking, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was talking, as he always was, he was a non-stop fountain of Krishna Katha. He was unstoppable. And even when his servant would want to stop him, this, time to take your lunch, and he would. We have to take lunch, or we have to go after that. We have to. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he wouldn't like to be stopped. And he wouldn't like his servant to stop him. He'd get upset. Don't interrupt. I'm talking. He's always talking. So how will he ever take his lunch? So his servant would anyway interrupt. Or sometimes they would. The people he was speaking to, they would speak to them and tell them, now just excuse yourselves, you go. Otherwise, he won't stop. He'll never eat. So anyway, Hayagriva Prabhu interjected within the discussion that this has taken place, and this devotee has not done his service properly, and what had happened, actually, there was a deity installation arranged in Assam, which is a remote place. It was in a remote place in a remote place. It was a remote village in a remote state. And there's not much Gauriya Math contact there. So the local devotee, he was supposed to organize everything. And all the party, and then Hayagriva Prabhu came with a party of devotees a few days in advance just to help with the final arrangements. And he found that before making the final arrangements, he had to make the initial arrangements because nothing had been arranged. And it should have started weeks and months ago to arrange a big festival. But then, seeing the situation, well, he could have just cancelled the whole thing and said, let's put it off till later. But he applied what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said in relation to Hayagriva Prabhu, is volcanic energy. And in a short time, even though he didn't know anyone there, he didn't know the local language, but within just like 3 or 4 days, he organized the whole festival, got donations, made publicity, and huge festival was organized. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't know when he came that it was a last-minute job to organize it all. But the other devotees, they were very upset with the local devotee on the spot who was supposed to be organizing it all. And they thought, well, Saraswati Thakur, Guru Maharaj, is thinking that he did it all, but actually we did it all. And he didn't do his job properly. So it should be brought to the attention of our Guru Dev. So Hayagriva Prabhu didn't want to do that. But being repeatedly requested, being pressed by one of the sannyasis, Hayagriva Prabhu brought this, said, this has happened. And as Hayagriva Prabhu had thought, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur became somewhat annoyed. Why are you complaining? Why are you complaining about someone? And then seeing that Hayagriva Prabhu was not happy, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur started praising Hayagriva Prabhu. And then Hayagriva thought, oh, it's even worse now. I was unhappy not because my guru is chastising me. He's thinking, I can't take the rebuke, but I'm unhappy because I didn't want to make him unhappy. So anyway, the method of how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur spoke to him, he changed the mood from being angry. He said that you should understand that all your service is meant for Radharani. That brings me back to the point I made. This whole narration comes back to the point that all the services in the Sankirtan mission, they're all services for Radharani. If you remember, I was making that point, so now we came back to that. Now he explained this, which is another theological contribution, you should say, but alright, make a note. That all, even apparently drudgerous services, going out, organizing bags of rice and bringing people, getting people to donate money, that's not spiritual. Asking people for money, it's not spiritual. It's mundane. But if done with proper understanding, this is as transcendental as worshiping, offering the arati. Or as transcendental as sitting in Golok Vrindavan making garlands for Radha and Krishna, if one can understand this. So he said that you should understand that service is meant for you. If others don't do that, that's not your concern. But if they miss the opportunity, that's not something for you to complain about. You have everything you do is meant for the service of Radha. So don't become disappointed if others don't. You have to do your service. So the external activity, his internal activities, relishing the service of Radha and Krishna, but he manifested that in the world. Madhuryojvala premardhya is Shri Rupa Anuga Bhaktida. He is giving the service that Rupa Goswami came to teach about. In the modern scholars, the very few of them who are interested in Gauriya Vaishnavism, their interest is, of course, academic and not. Mundane means it's not a spiritual interest. But they call this Chaitanya Vaishnavism. But we don't say Gauriya Vaishnavism. Gauriya means servant of Radharani, and Rupanuga. We don't say Chaitanyanuga or Gauranuga, Rupanuga. So Rupanuga means followers of Rupa Goswami, because that gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is received through Rupa Goswami. If Rupa Goswami hadn't revealed it, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would have come and gone and no one would have understood anything about him. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadama hyam dadati swapadantikam. We offer obeisances we pray for the shelter of the lotus feet of Rupa Goswami, who has revealed within this world the heart's appetency, or heart's strong desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what is that? Well, that can be understood in two ways. One is his Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna in the mood of Radha, pining after Krishna. So, Vraja Gopi Bhav, this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has revealed that. But that he has revealed, it was revealed by Rupa Goswami. No one else. Only two people understood it at one point. They were Swarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami. But Swarup Damodar, he didn't reveal that to others. But Rupa Goswami did. In his... Anyway, that's all. But another way this is understood, this Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and our own Prabhupada would explain, what is that inner heart's feeling of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Priti vite ache jato nagaradi gram sabatra pracha hoi bimorana. So, these two are non-different. Make a note of that. Make a note that Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishta, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's internal longing and his apparently external activities, they're also not different. So, Rupa Goswami revealed that, therefore we are Rupa Anuga. And Rupa Goswami, in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, particularly, described what is the Vraja Rasa, or the Rasa of devotees of Vrindavan that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give, and especially, and how to approach that, how to come to that platform. That's all described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So that's another, apart from the specific pastime of Rupa Goswami revealing the meaning of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking as if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would recite a verse which sounds just like some kind of mundane love, and actually it is, it's taken from mundane poetry, in which, so Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami understanding, Rupa Goswami revealed what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was feeling and thinking of when he recited this. He wasn't talking about any mundane love, but he was revealing the feelings of Radharani for Krishna. So that's Rupa Goswami revealed that, and he revealed everything else in relation to that in an encapsulated form, a concise form in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. These topics might be a little difficult to grasp for those who are reading Bhagavad Gita as it is and haven't studied Srimad Bhagavatam. But these are difficult topics. Difficult to grasp even mentally, and to grasp them in our heart, that's even more abstruse or subtle, it's even more subtle. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that was very much his teachings of the language. The level is it's not very easy to enter into. His writings are not even possible to, some of them are not possible to translate in simple English without adding lots of footnotes. So everything he said was so many. Well, that's true whenever we speak of Krishna, but especially his style of presentation was, from our perspective, very complex. From his perspective, not. Just like for Einstein, when he's discussing E equals mc squared, For him, it's all understandable. That's why he could make that formula. But for everyone else who tries to discuss it, in fact, we hear that he could only speak with one or two people freely and discuss these things. And up to date, no one else, it seems, has really been, no one's understood it. Although some people may understand to some degree. So, for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his manner of speaking was not complex, it was just talking, that's all. But for everyone else, it was very difficult, for most. So, when he would give lectures afterward, all the disciples would gather around one of his sannyasi disciples, Bhakti Rakhak Sridhar Maharaj, and he would give the class again in a simplified form that they could understand. He could grasp it. And it wasn't just a matter of the language that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used. He didn't speak in Bengali because you could say it's Bengali, but most Bengalis couldn't understand it. And I've seen this. I've approached some things written in the course of my attempting to translate his writings. Sometimes I would approach a Bengali who's well educated from the mundane point of view, and actually a devotee. I specifically think it would be a devotee, and they wouldn't understand what it means. Or even if they'd attempt, they'd get it fabulously wrong. They wouldn't understand. So most Bengalis wouldn't understand. It's not just a matter of understanding Bengali. Of course, Sridhar Maharaj had a background in Sanskrit also, so you could say he would have more entrance into the language, because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's language was what we would say highly Sanskritized. So it's just like sometimes they say this Mani Pravala, it's a form of Tamil. But if someone speaks in Mani Pravala, then approximately 99.99% of Tamils won't understand what's being said. So his language is highly Sanskritized, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Just like Mani Pravala is highly Sanskritized. But it's not just being able to understand Sanskrit that gives entrance into that. But it's also required to be chite te korea aikya, to have one's heart the same as the guru. Then you can understand. Otherwise you can't understand. Which is interesting in the present context of ISKCON, there's so many funny ideas coming out. So we can understand that those who are making funny ideas and not sane ideas, there's something missing in the heart department. It's called Bhakti Siddhanta and Bhakti Vedanta. Something else is there. It's not Arna Kari Homane Asha. It's not completely in line, cultivating desires other than Guru Mukha Padma Vaka Chite Te Korya Aikya, and then comes out Chite Te Korya Dvaita. Make more than there's two. The Prabhupada said this, and I think that. So something else comes out. But those who are Chite Te Korya Aikya, then what they say is the same. Or Prabhupada is saying, oh, Bhaktisiddhanta is very complex. Prabhupada is very simple. It's different. It's not different. It's the same. Absolutely the same. There's no difference whatsoever. Just like there's no difference between Radharani and Bhaktisiddhanta. No difference whatsoever. But there is differences. But in essence, not different. So please chant Hare Krishna for a few minutes and I'll come back. Yeah. So to resume. morning is a long session. It's not over yet. So, I apologize for those who are not accustomed to sitting for long satsangs. We'll have breaks every so often so you can get up and stretch your legs and stretch your neurons also, possibly. The Tamil word for neuron? No, brain cell. Well, there's one difference, or at least external difference, between Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada and Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. Our Prabhupada, as we might say. He didn't give very long classes generally, and at one point even he told devotees that don't give class more than half an hour because people can't listen longer. They don't have the capacity to listen longer. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he sat to formally speak, at least 2 hours. That was the minimum. Daily. And 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours. Who's ready for that? He would go on. And then sometimes at the end he would apologize. Sorry, I kept you for a long time. He said, I'm unable to express in any language what I have to convey. Therefore, my lectures are difficult and prolonged. He also apologized for his inability to speak simply because it's... By long practice, I'm accustomed to speak in this way, in a very apparently complex manner. He said, because I don't know properly any language of this world, therefore I'm not able to speak in a manner that people can easily understand. Therefore, I'm obliged to speak at length. Another reason he gave is that people have so many misconceptions. And therefore, I'm obliged to speak at length to dismantle the misconceptions. Some years ago, I gave a copy of my, or I presented a copy of my book, Vamsi Das Babaji, to a young Indian man. I guess he must be middle-aged by now. He's from business family, and he was busy expanding the business, setting up new offices in different parts of the world. So I gave him the book. It says, A Man of the World. And you've seen the picture of Vamsi Das Babaji. He is quite clearly not a person of this world, not the kind of person you'd want to introduce to your in-laws, as they say. If you're invited to see the mayor, he's not the kind of person you want to bring with you. At least the mayor would be. It's not what we would call a formally presentable person. So that's clear from the photo of him, which is on the front of the book, the way, his appearance, the way he's dressed, or rather hardly dressed at all, and his wild hair and beard, and the look in his eyes, he actually looks crazy. And from the external point of view, he was crazy. And in any other country but India, he'd probably be considered crazy. Maybe go to the mental institution or something. Wouldn't make any difference to him because he didn't live in this world. where he was, it really didn't make that much difference. Hare Krishna. So anyway, I gave the book to him and he took it and he looked at it and he said, who was he? You have to read the book to find out. What did he do? He doesn't look like the kind of person who would do things of any significance in the worldly sense. This man, this businessman, who was busy doing things, opening branch offices in different countries, expanding the business, making new contacts, making more and more money, even though he could have actually just not done anything because his parents were already rich. So I replied to him that, well, he loved Krishna. The man didn't relate to it, couldn't relate to it. So what is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's glory? He loved Krishna. But he also did many things. The founder of 64 Gauriya Mathas, established several presses, he established 6 or 7 magazines, depending on whether you want to call the Harmonist a new one, which it is practically, but it was considered a continuation of the Satyanatosha, which is in a different language. He initiated so many disciples. He was given formal receptions by the dignitaries of several cities. He met many kings and the Maharajas. At that time there were still Maharajas, at least in name only, in India. He met the British governor. He developed Mayapur especially. So he did many things. He made his mark in the world. His mother would have been proud of him. Just like sometimes we find it. Well, especially in our generation of Prabhupada's disciples, the parents were often really upset when their sons joined the movement. Because they wanted them to do something in the world, and instead they're just jumping around in the streets in orange bedsheets, as they see it. So, but then later, they became somewhat pleased in many cases if their son became a leader, just like within ISKCON, just like Keshav Bharati Maharaj explained. Told him when he went home to visit his parents, his father, who was really against his joining, went after many years went back, and his father, because he was a leader in the movement, in charge of several temples and so many people and so much money, and his father, with, you could say, begrudging approval, said that, so you become a bit of a big shot, huh? So, good, you know, you did something. Became a big shot. But also myself, when I used to regularly visit Burma, which is now called Myanmar, Bangladesh, the British call that Burma. So I was regularly visiting in Rangoon, the capital, which is now renamed Yangon. And I would regularly visit a Marwari businessman there who gave us a place to stay. Actually, not a place to stay, but he arranged prasadam and all these things. So I once meant to meet him in his office. When I was going, I was a brahmachari mostly, and then I came once after taking sannyas. And so I met him, and he addressed me by my brahmachari name, and I told him, well, my name changed now. Now it's a different name. I took sannyas. So this Marwari businessman, he turned to his friend and said, "Promotion ho gaya." Got a promotion. That's how worldly people see it. And that's why it was necessary to found the Gauriya Math. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to refer to, he would often use these terms, morphology and ontology. I don't know if there are such terms. It means the external manifestation and the internal essence. Actually, morphology, the actual English translation of it is the study of the body. It's a branch of medicine, pathology, I'm not exactly sure. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would use that to mean the study of the external body, or the activities, or the buildings, and the organization, and even his own big title. In the sense that the soul is different from the body, they're not exactly dividable or separable, because the temple of Krishna, or the Gauriya Math, is the building, the Gauriya Math, is spiritual. But there's, at least what we can say, it's just like Krishna and Krishna's body are not different. But people who see externally, with external vision, they see Krishna as a prince, as a philosopher, as the husband of so many different women. So, in this we spoke of the buildings and the organization, and this is the morphology of the Gauriya Math. And the ontology is the message or essence. And he also applied this. He used many words in original ways, not finding, in English, not finding sufficient terms for explaining. He would use morphology was another of his neologisms in English. It means a new word or a new usage of a word. So he also said that the following the rules and regulations, that is the morphology of bhakti, and ontology is the mood, that's the spirit of surrender that's supposed to, that the following the rules and regulations is supposed to give rise to. So anyway, if we think of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the founder of 64 Gauriya Maths, and he initiated so many disciples, he wrote so many books, and like this, he was a big shot. In the worldly sense, he was recognized by the British governor visited Mayapur, and the British governor of the Madras Presidency inaugurated the Krishna Kirtan Hall, which is the hall of the Gauriya Math, and he inaugurated, it means he opened, he officially opened it, Madras. So, if Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had been a sadhu in the manner that Bhaktisiddhanta Babaji Maharaj was a sadhu, then no British governor would have, well, for a start, he wouldn't be having functions. Like, well, they might have some function, some disappearance festival of an acharya, but no British dignitary would visited such a thing. But because he was a big shot, he had a big organization, and he had buildings built, and he himself was moving among the highest class of society. He would meet intellectuals and professors and business leaders. So the political leaders also took. And especially the British liked him because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur because he followed Bhaktivinoda Thakur's policy of cooperating with the British, which pretty much everyone else around Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, except those who were in the pay of the British, and even many of those who were in the pay of the British, they didn't like it. Bengal was where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was based from the morphological standpoint, the external standpoint, was the main hotbed, the fulcrum of resistance to British rule, protest against British rule. So they liked him, and he propagated in his newspaper. And the Gauriya, his main magazine, in the first editions, and the Nadia Prakash, they would give not his newspaper, they would not just give news of the spiritual world, but also some news of the material world. So in that, you would find sometimes a report. This isn't in the book, actually. I didn't put that in. I didn't give that detail. But in reporting the news of, if say there was some explosion done by those who are fighting for independence, he would, in the Nadia Prakash, it would be reported as an atrocity. Maybe, I don't know if it was the rule that newspapers had to take such a stance, otherwise they'd be closed down. You could report it in a neutral way also. But he would report it in such a manner to condemn the people who did such a thing. It might have been required by the British rule, but anyway, he wasn't in favor. Anyway, I didn't want to speak so much about that this morning because we have limited time and there's so many things, and hopefully the book in which I've summarized all these things will be published fairly soon. So, what is the ontology? It's not just that he built buildings that we are particularly interested in, because so many people build buildings. And even though the most impressive from the worldly point of view building that was built under his direction was the Gauriya Math in Bagh Bazar in Calcutta. It's a very beautiful and impressive building. But there's another building built in Calcutta. I'm not exactly. It must have been before the Bagh Bazar Gauriya Math was built, which is in they're both in a similar style, marble buildings, but the Victoria Memorial in Calcutta is much bigger and much more impressive than the Bagh Bazar Gauriya Math. So, even from the point of view of building buildings, his building was not as impressive as others. And he stated several times, seeing that his disciples were concerned with the building or the morphology, who will occupy this room after the mat, Sri Gauriya mat, was shifted from the rented house in Ultradingi Road to Bagh Bazar, then that, from that cramped, rented premises to a big marble palace, and the disciples were fighting, no, I should have this room, no, you should, no, no, I should have this room. So he perceived that some of his disciples were more concerned with their prestige and position, and therefore I should have the best room to commensurate with my status. So he several times said that I have not come as a like a contractor to build buildings. That is not my function. But I've come as a peon of Rupa and Raghunath. That's his ontology. So in this way he was instructing his disciples also that we are supposed to serve the mission, and the buildings are meant for serving the mission, not for serving our sense gratification. They give the buildings give facility for the inhabitants to fulfill their bodily needs so that they can, without being distracted by having to in any other way fulfill their bodily needs, they can fully engage their bodies in the service of the mission. But if we think that the purpose of the building is to serve my body, that's morphology, being concerned with the body. So what is the ontology? We should be more interested in the ontology than the morphology. He founded 64 Gaudiya Mathas. Well, so many people founded so many religious movements and opened so many temples, made so many followers. So in that regard, Vivekananda was a much bigger figure than he. They were living at the same, they were contemporary, although Vivekananda was older. Why are we making a big fuss about him? He was a sadhu. There were so many sadhus in Bengal and in all of India. Well, we're concerned with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and not Vivekananda or any other. This Ananda, that Ananda, as Prabhupada would sometimes say. And he was concerned, we're concerned with what he gave. Even among the followers of, if you want to call them followers, or the fans of Vivekananda, they don't make such a big thing about him that he founded the Ramakrishna Mission, and he founded the Belur Mutt. But even they think he was a great... Well, that he went to America, that's the big thing they talk about. He went to America and gave a few speeches at the World Parliament of Religions when I was in Bengal in the late 1970s. People would come, "Have you heard of Vivekananda? He went to Chicago in the year, whatever the year was, and he gave." And you say, who? And they think to date, many Bengalis especially think that everyone in America knows about Vivekananda. Although hardly anyone knows. So they think that he has... because at that time there was some interest. But you know, it's just like for some time there's interest in Michael Jackson. Who has heard... Now, this is a question for all of you. Who has heard of Donny Osmond? Those of you who are from the West. You ever heard of Donny Osmond? Well, when I was about 10 years old, there was this horrible song, which was the most popular song at the time. What was the song? Puppy Love. There's a song called Puppy Love, and he was a puppy also. He was only about 12 years old or something. So it's very popular, and in Britain, he was American, this Donny Osmond, but in Britain, he was even more popular than in America. So people, Donny Osmond, such a wonderful song. Now he's forgotten. So like that, Vivekananda, it was a novelty that some Indian... An Indian in itself was a novelty, but dressed in real Indian style and spoke very good English and addressed, and people were and gave very lucid lectures, and it was something interesting, just like much less effect than Donny Osmond, but it was in the, I might have been in the newspapers for a few days. And then they forgot for the last over 100 years. And people in Bengal say that Vivekananda is still, people in America say Vivekananda said, boom! Jump to attention, but no such thing. In Russia, have people ever heard of Vivekananda? No, only the devotees probably have heard of him. So, it's not just his achievements and his popularity. What did he teach? What was in his heart? So that is there's no difference between that and Vamsi Das, Babaji Maharaj, and Bhaktisiddhanta. They're not more or less in any respect. But from our standpoint, we celebrate the disappearance of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur because what was in the heart of Vamsi Das Babaji Maharaj, what is in the heart of all pure devotees, he made the arrangement by establishing the Gauriya Math and going here and there and giving lectures and everything he did, he brought that to the world. So in this way he was fulfilling the mission of Rupa Goswami, Rupanu. He was doing that. So if we want to understand Bhaktisiddhanta, then we have to understand Bhaktisiddhanta, because that's all he preached. His name is Bhaktisiddhanta, and he preached what is the Siddhanta of Bhakti. And that also, you could say, has its morphology and ontology. There's all the philosophical understanding, and then there's the Siddhanta, the perfect conclusion is to become a gopi and make garlands for Radha and Krishna. So he's non-different from Bhakti. He is Bhakti Siddhanta. It's not just a name. In spiritual existence, the name and the person are not different. So in the modern world, you have to give some every little blob of screaming matter that comes out of a mother's womb, if it's a human, some name has to be given to them. You have to call them something to distinguish them from other blobs of screaming matter. They go on screaming, usually for about 70 years, and then they do a final scream, and they go off to scream somewhere else. So you have to give them a name. As Shakespeare said, a rose would smell as sweet by any other name. In other words, it's just a name. What's in a name, they say. That's why the demons, like Vivekananda, they don't give importance to Krishna's name, and they berate the Vaishnavas for even saying that the Supreme has a name. Because if you give a name, it's mundane. It's because everything mundane has a name, but the name and the person are different. So the Supreme Truth can't have any name, because the Supreme Truth is one. This is their brashta vivek, or their misunderstanding. Their misanalysis, or wrong analysis. But Krishna is his name, and the Krishna has a meaning also. Krishna means all attractive. So the person Krishna is not different from his name. The qualities that are described by that name are not different. That's not the only reason. It's ontologically, or in essence, not different from Krishna. It's not that Krishna has a name, but Krishna is Krishna. His name, his form, his qualities, they're all non-different. It's just that we can say that the name of Krishna is the manifestation of Krishna who is perceived by the sense of sound. But there's none different from the sense, from the form of Krishna, who is perceived through the sense of vision. And all it's, he is a non-differentiated entity. Advaita Nachutam in the first line is a non-differentiated entity. So similarly, the name Bhakti Siddhanta, it's not just that I have to call him something, so okay, he's given this name. Actually, he was given the name Siddhanta Saraswati in his youth, when he was 15 years old, for his expertise in Siddhanta. Siddhanta is, this term has a particular usage in Jyotish, which is the science of the Vedic science of astronomy. So he was given that name. And actually, even before he took sannyas, apparently he used the name Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So that is his name. Those who gave him the name Siddhanta Saraswati, they can be credited for that in the same way that Agni can be credited for giving Krishna the Sudarshan Chakra. It's his anyway. But he had the honor to be known as the giver of the Sudarshan Chakra to Krishna. Although anyway, it belongs to, and everything belongs to Krishna. So anyway, without getting into that more, the ontology of Bhakti Siddhanta is Bhakti Siddhanta. Inside and outside the same. There's another theological contribution, but you don't need to write this one down. It's all easy. He defined you can write it down also. A definition of a Vaishnava is someone who is inside and outside the same. And he said that worldly persons, they profess one thing outside, but inside they have a different agenda. Just like you'll see people talk of love, peace, solidarity, cooperation, but they have a different agenda. They'll say so many things which sound good. That's why we have to be very careful. And the religious field also, because the putanas, in the form of religious preachers, use words like love, compassion, brotherhood. I guess you can't say brotherhood in the modern age. You have to say brother and sisterhood. So, or brotherhood and sisterhood, whatever. So they use these terms and people think, oh, this is very good. But actually they have the same business as everyone else, which is simply to exploit others. Just they're more sophisticated in doing so. So, what is the ontology? How are we to understand it? By studying bricks? No. We won't understand it. We'll have to understand the Bhakti Siddhanta, by which he who is living in Mayapur, practically like Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj, and he was not exactly, because, well, during his Shatakoti Nam Yagya, he was chanting a vow to chant 10 billion names of the Lord, which took just over 9 years. There's the morphology of it. And the ontology is that every name of Krishna, he's living with Krishna. So, but he was also managing the mart. There wasn't a mart at that time. There was just the affairs at the Jogpit. But he was living renounced in the same way that Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who was on the other side of the river, he was living in the same level of renunciation. Gokishodas Babaji Maharaj said, I see the renunciation of the Vairagya of Rupa and Raghunath in my problem. He would address Siddhanta Saraswati as my problem. So he was living a very renounced life. Then what impelled him, actuated him, inspired him to give up that renounced existence, away from the world, living like a real sadhu, and to start building buildings? It's not the building of sadhus, build buildings in cities. I mean, maybe you could build a temple in a holy place, build temples in cities. The sadhus, they build temples on the tops of hills or in holy places, not in Calcutta and Delhi and Madras and Cuttack and Bhuvaneshwar and Lucknow and so many places. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who was living a very renounced, especially during his Shatakoti Nama Jagya, he would go on chanting day and night, sitting in a grass hut. And when it rained, he would put an umbrella and go and chant. And he would just eating very simply, not very little intercourse with the outside world. If people came to him, he would speak to them. He wasn't going out and looking for them. So what impelled him to build so many buildings? What happened? He fell in Maya. All of a sudden he thought, now I have to be a big shot. What's the use of sitting here just eating some rough rice? I'll start a big movement and become famous. And I'll live in luxurious apartments and dress nicely and meet all the big people of the world and have lots of followers. That's what he did. So you might think he fell into Maya. He was living as a sadhu, and then dhanam, janam, sundarim. He got all the things which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said not to aspire for. He got money, followers, and women. Well, he didn't have much to do with women, but he did have women disciples also. So, but that wasn't overt or manifest. You wouldn't see a bunch of women disciples hanging around him. He was very strict about that. So, they were there, but in the background. Or to be more precise, behind a bamboo screen. That was normal in those days. In public functions, such as that of a sadhu speaking in public, the women would be behind a bamboo screen. You wouldn't see them, nor would they see him. He would give initiation to women disciples from behind a screen. That was normal, because it wasn't considered proper to see them for anyone. Only their own, that was the system. Only their family members would see them. Although they would come to the temple of women, anyway, I don't get to that too much. So anyway, it might appear that he got into Maya. But all this was done for serving Bhaktisiddhanta. Just like our own Prabhupada, he was at the time when Krishna Balaram temple was being constructed, someone said to him, at least I heard this, I never had it confirmed, but it's an instructive anecdote, even if it didn't take place. And someone said to him, no, actually I saw something, but maybe a little not so clearly worded in the conversations. The way I'm saying it is like a summation of the points. That someone said to him that, maybe it was a Chidananda, even he would say things like that to Prabhupada. So, that the six Goswamis, they lived in Vrindavan under a different tree every night. And you're supposed to be a follower of the six Goswamis, and you're building a big temple. So why? You don't seem that you're properly following. And Prabhupada said that, he replied that, because I have to preach the message of the six Goswamis, therefore this temple is required. Not for me, it's required for you. I can sit under a tree and speak, but who will come and hear? If you just think about it, just before he went to America, he was in Bhaktivedanta Swami. Who is that? All right, give him 4 animals or something like that. Give him 25 paisa. Give him something. All right, take it, go. All right, sadhu. It's just like people in the shops in India. The shopkeepers, they keep 10 paisa coins. The only use for that is for shopkeepers to give to wandering sadhus. I don't think it's something in North India. You see, they give them 10 paisa and they go on. And because if you don't give them, they'll harass you. So you give them 10 paisa. Mm. And the only other use is to put in the hundi box. Otherwise, there's no use. Beggars at the stoplights, they won't accept even 1 rupee nowadays. What to speak of 10 paisa. So Prabhupada said that it's not this building is not for me, it's for you, because then you will think, oh, Bhaktivedanta Swami is very important. All right, let's listen to what he has to say. So his message is not different, but because people see morphology, they see only the external manifestation. So the message which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had to preach to be heard, he needed to make an organization. And of course, that's one reason, to provide facilities to the people that came to him to serve, also to serve the mission of Bhakti Siddhanta. But it was needed for preaching. This morphology is required for preaching, just like in the material world, a body is required for the ontological reason for the soul to be in this material world is to enjoy separately from Krishna. That's the meaning of existence for conditioned souls. So they need a body to do that. They need a but otherwise you become a ghost and you don't have a body and you can't enjoy. So in the same way, to manifest the ontology of Bhaktisiddhanta, a body is required. But what is the ontology? What is the Bhaktisiddhanta? Well, it's very simple. Jivesha Rupai Krishna Nityadas. But because when the ontology of Bhaktisiddhanta, when it falls on the barren heart of a conditioned soul, who considers that the ontology or the meaning of life is to enjoy this world, it's just like if a drop of water falls on parched earth, then that drop of water will be immediately absorbed into it and you won't even see that any water came there. So it's the same thing. If the message of Bhagavad Gita, Jivesha Rupai Krishna Nityadas, when it comes to the mind or when it reaches the consciousness of a conditioned soul, he converts it to Ahambhogi, Ishwaraham Ahambhogi. I am the controller and I am the judge. Jivesha Rupai Krishna, very good. We should be devotees of Krishna. Yes, we shall do so. We shall make a very good show of doing so and become greater enjoyers of the material world in the name of being a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is what happens. So if the earth is completely dry, devoid of any ras, of any moisture, of any water is the medium within which a flavor is perceived. You can't, if your palate is completely dry and you eat some completely dry food, then some juice has to come in the mouth, some saliva. Otherwise you can't taste it at all. So persons who are completely devoid of any rasa, or even any trace of rasa, bhakti rasa, who are completely dried up due to having no connection with bhakti whatsoever, if they receive that message just without a drop, just a drop of it, then they will merge that into their own misunderstanding. So what is required is a flood. So to bring the flood of Krishna consciousness, an organization is required. One person can sit in one place and speak one thing, and not many people will hear it, and probably they may not understand it also, because they'll think, just, you know, another sadhu, so many sadhus. He's doing Gorky Shodas Babaji Maharaj. He spoke very strongly, but no one took him seriously. Another sadhu. Even they would superficially respect him, but you know, he's eccentric. That's all. He's highly advanced, but you know, all this condemning others. So you don't have to take it seriously. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he wanted to serve Gorky Shodas Babaji Maharaj by pounding the people of the world into taking it seriously. You don't take it seriously, we'll make you take it seriously. So for that he needed an organization. He needed to bring the flood of Bhaktisiddhanta. He needed that not one person speaking in one place, but many people speaking in presses, speaking day and night. Over and there's a great drought. He would use the term of famine. There's a famine of Krishna Katha. We need that there should be hundreds of thousands of people speaking Krishna Katha. For this he christened or dubbed the printing press as the Brihad Mridanga. This Mridanga that vibrates bhakti ras, that that can be heard from a short distance, but the Mridanga of the printing press, that can be heard all over the world. And he also called, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also called his sannyasis, the jivit Mridanga, living Mridangas. They will go everywhere, they will vibrate Krishna Katha. So he said there is a famine of Krishna Katha. When there's a famine, there's no use just giving a little. You need huge supplies of food. How many? Can you imagine how much rice is required every day to feed the people of Salem? Imagine if it was all put in one place. Each day, how much rice is required to feed the 7 lakhs or so people of this city? That's more than you can take home in a shopping bag. It's a lot of rice. So, how many people are required to carry it, supply it? It's not a one-man job. So if people are starving for days, and the whole world is starving, then how much food is required? And the whole world is starving of Krishna Katha. How many people are required to deliver them? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said the same thing. Although he can spread Krishna consciousness himself by himself, but he enlisted helpers. Ekale malaka ani kaha kaha jabo. I'm just one gardener. I have the fruit of love of God. How many places can I go? So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he expanded Bhaktisiddhanta by founding the Gaudiya Mathas, so that the teachings of Rupa Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they could be expanded more and more all over the world. So, we'll take a little break again. Sorry to make it so long. I'm not sorry at all. But, I'm sorry if that you are not happy. I don't think you're not happy, but maybe you're not accustomed to listening so much. But in terms of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, this is just, we're just beginning in terms of his lecture. If the lectures he would give, if the devotees might have been wondering, when he's going to finish this, maybe about halfway through now. So if you want, you can take a break and those stretch your legs and other things, and those who want to stay here, they can chant Hare Krishna for a few minutes. I'll read a translation of this. Yes, I might as well put this on. Most convenient place to put it. On my neck. Gets in the way everywhere else. This poem, which I've just sung, those poems can be sung if they're actual poems and not modern poems, which don't have any particular form or structure. This expresses much of the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. The reasoning, you could say the reasoning behind it. Oh. It's a big thing to explain it in detail. I remember years ago, Jan Tadmaraj was doing that. He was taking one verse at a time, and that was later made into a book explaining this. So, I'll just read the translation. If we start explaining them, we'll be here for years. So, it's a translation. Wicked mind. What kind of Vaishnava are you? Your show of chanting Harinam in a solitary place is for false prestige. Simply hypocrisy. Mundane prestige is like... Any suggestions? Hog stool. So if we want mundane prestige, it means it's just like we eagerly find out a hog that's passing stool and pick it up and smear it all over our body. It says, glorious as that. We want prestige. I am big. I am famous. People respect me. Well, they should respect me. Why don't they respect me? So this is all equivalent to smearing ourselves with hog stool. It's most impure. Mundane prestige is like hog stool. And if the power comes on, let me know if this is running out. Do you not know that such repute is an illusion cast by Maya? What is the value of contemplating wealth and women day and night? All of that is temporary. Your wealth is the progenitor of material enjoyment. Use it to serve Madha. You are not meant to lust for women whose only proprietor is Jada, Krishna. Ravan fought with Lord Ramachandra to gain the tree of worldly reputation. Yet that apparent oasis was merely a mirage in the desert wasteland of the Lord's material potency. You might have difficulty translating this. Be attached to the solid position of a Vaishnava. If you neglect worshipping the Lord from that position, you will attain hell. Why do you envy Vaishnavas and suffer torment by desiring the honor accorded them? Vaishnavas have left behind desires for worldly fame. The fame that automatically follows them is never a temporary worldly opulence. That fame comes from a devotee's relationship with Lord Hari. It is devoid of even a trace of worldly illusion and is untinged by the materialistic cheating propensity. The prestige of so-called popularity within the material realm is compared to a female dog-eater, and attempting to live in solitude to supposedly perform bhajan is compared to an entangling network. Know that anyone striving in either of these ways lives in the hell of illusion. I shall give up kirtan and smear myself with worldly honor. What is the good of seeking that kind of glory? I will always remind you that Madhavendra Puri never deceived himself by stealing from the storehouse of emotion. Your cheap reputation is like hog stool and should never be equated with the honor accorded to eminent devotees like Madhavendra Puri. Under the sway of envy, after having abandoned the excellence of congregational kirtan, you have absorbed yourself in material rasa. Therefore, O wicked mind, the glories of self-styled solitary worship are propagated only by false yogis using unscrupulous means to deceive others. To save yourself from these pitfalls, please carefully contemplate the instructions given by Lord Chaitanya to Srila Sanatana Goswami. You spell it. Do not in any circumstance forget two sets of opposing principles: dry apparent renunciation versus real appropriate renunciation, and the bound state versus the liberated condition. Never mistakenly consider these conflicting conceptions equal. Remember this and loudly chant Harinam. One who has rejected money, women, and the tigress of fame is truly a Vaishnava. Well, that deserves to be in the aphorism. That's an aphorism. Kanaka Kamani Pratishta Bhagini Charyache Jare Shaita Vaishnava. One who has rejected money, women, and the tigress of fame is truly a Vaishnava. It's actually what it says. Is a Vaishnava. Factually detached from material life, he is a pure devotee who will attain victory over birth and death. One who partakes moderately or appropriately of worldly things deemed necessary for performing bhajan is indeed detached and does not succumb to the disease of material infatuation. Let's just do a little editing as we go along here. Appropriately. Devoid of selfish attachment and accepting everything in relation to the Lord, he perceives all sense objects as non-different from Madha. That also needs a comma. That is proper renunciation, a great fortune through which Hari's glory is manifest in matter. Yet the attainment of one who chants the Lord's name hoping to enhance his own material prestige is simply hypocrisy. O mind, reject those seeking impersonal liberation and those desiring sense objects. Both are non-devotees. Things used in relation to Krishna belong to the transcendental realm. They are never material products and thus can neither be owned nor forsaken by persons interested in either mundane enjoyment or renunciation. The mind of a Mayavadi is involved with matters other than Krishna. Considering himself liberated, he criticizes Vaishnavas. Being a servant of the Vaishnavas, you should always hope to attain devotion. Why do you instead make such a pandemonium about your solitary worship? One who artificially shuns what could be used in the Lord's service, calling himself a renunciant, can never become a Vaishnava. By abandoning Hari's lotus feet and remaining in a cottage of solitude, what will he gain besides an insubstantial glory? Remain in Sri Radha's service and reject the snake of material enjoyment. The glory of kirtan is not for attaining personal recognition. O mind, why have you abandoned your identity as Radha's eternal servant to practice the cheating of Nirjan Bhajan? The Vrajavasis are the wealth of preachers. Vrajavasi van pracharakadham. They never aspire for the material reputation cherished only by the living dead. Vrajavasis are infused with life. Hence they preach their glorification of Lord Krishna being devoid of desire for fame. Prana che ta she hetu pracha. That's sometimes said as prana che ja she hetu pracha. Who has got life, they can preach. But the original is prana che ta, which means they have life. And they means Vrajavasis. This servant of Radha and Krishna always desires to glorify the Lord and enjoins all to loudly sing the names of Lord Hari. The transcendental power of kirtan automatically wakens contemplation of the Lord. Only at that stage is Nirjan Bhajan feasible. Okay. This is running out of time. Does anyone else? That may also run out. Huh? Does anyone else have a recorder? They can bring that just in case all of these run out. Yours is also dead. Put a new battery. Okay, that's good. So, let us continue. I was talking about how the by the way, this song which we just sung is written by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, just in case any of you didn't know. And the one we sung earlier, or one of the ones we sung earlier, Krishna Haite Chatur Mukha Hai Krishna Seva Mukha begins with that. That's also written by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So I was speaking about how the morphology is required to bring the ontology. The Gaurya Mat was required for spreading the Bhaktisiddhanta. And what is Bhaktisiddhanta? Well, simply we can say it's the same teachings that we all know very well by the mercy of Bhaktisiddhanta, revealed through Bhaktivedanta. Bhaktivedanta and Bhaktisiddhanta is the same word, just a slightly different connotation. So we're receiving through the mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the mercy of and teachings, which are the mercy of Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur. So all acharyas teach the same thing. But there is a